I just love Yoko Taro's games. Not the games that he makes. I do love those as well, but like his mind games.
Hello and welcome to another Dead Pixel, a podcast about games, entertainment, anime, life, a little bit of everything in between. I'm your host, Joe, and with me, as always, the celebrity who came from Kids Bop series to now make his new CD, Nick Bop. Nick, how's it going?
I'm doing good. You know, Nick Bop, it's not a direct sequel, but it is a spiritual successor to Kids Bop. And, you know, there's a lot of songs on Nick Bop that are, you know, really inspired by the people I knew that helped me do Kids Bop, especially Little Carl. May he rest in peace. You know, that, you know, who knew that much cotton candy, you know, could crush a person, especially someone so small.
I assumed that, you know, it's like because it seems to be going to directly to karaoke joints all over the world. With you're going to be relying heavy on the MIDI MIDI chip tunes, and I mean,
MIDI,
I remember you were really big into Turn Down for What back in the day. So,
yeah. Yeah, you know, I would be lying if I said that Turn Down for What was not a huge inspiration for the album. Gosh, that was such a freaking good video. The song's
you
amazing
introduced
too.
Me to it back in Japan, so
that, I mean, the song itself is already good, and then like the video is just like, what were they doing, man? What were they thinking? I'm doing good, Joe. I would ask how you're doing, but I'm really concerned with myself right now. I'm trying to move out of my apartment to another apartment that's 7.5 minutes closer to work. a month from now, and I got almost everything packed up, and it's just been nonstop packing.
Yeah, moving is not fun. And you've been doing it yearly, so hopefully you might stay at this next place.
This place I actually have stayed at for 2 years.
Has it been 2 years already?
I know, it's crazy. But the next place is going to be like, they're doing like a 15 month lease, something like that. And so in Texas, I didn't know this until I got bit by it, but you have to give notice. You have to give 30 days notice at least, unless the lease asks for longer notice. So a lot of places ask for 30 days notice. And I just want to get on my little soapbox right here and say that is ridiculous and should be illegal, because what is the lease for? The lease is the notice. If you don't want to live there anymore, then you don't have to say nothing. You just let the lease run out. If I am the landlord and I don't want you to live here anymore, I don't re-sign the lease. That's it. You know, like the notice thing is like, no, that's stupid. But I just used to work in, you know, property management. So what do I know? Anyway.
Apparently not much.
Well, it was a different state. It was a different state, but it was in a state where with a lot more turnover, and a lot, I don't know. That's why they do it that way here. But I think it's an overprotection, quote, overprotection for the owner, is what it seems like to me. But, you know, it's whatever.
That's why it was for that. The 30 day notice was the same for when I was out after high school for me. All the apartments in the Midwest where they pretty much wanted it so they could, if they knew you weren't going to renew, they wanted to make sure they could start showing the apartment to people or prepping to have you replaced afterwards.
I'm not an owner. I hope that one day I can own a condo or an apartment and rent it out to somebody. But I think that's ridiculous. It's just insane. But, you know, That's just my opinion. Anyway, but for real, Joe, how is your life? How's your life going right now?
Doing all right. Ended up getting my teeth cleaned today. It's the first time in like 2 years, which I'm really bad about going to the dentist. They're like, I brush my teeth normally. It's not like I just wait for them to clean my teeth. No, in fact, they're like, yeah, no cavities, no nothing. I'm like, yeah, that's what I thought. There's no problems.
It was like a year and change between. So I did one. I'm due for one this month, honestly. So I need to go do that. But 6 months ago when I went before, it had been like a year and something. And they were like, you know, you really need to be getting in here for the teeth cleaning. And it's, you know, there's nothing wrong, but it's, you need to be doing it. And I'm like, dang it, you're right. So thank you for reminding me, Joe. I'll get back in there and get my teeth cleaned. I like that squeaky clean feeling you get when you get your teeth all shinied up.
Yeah, well, having gone like overseas and had done a couple different countries, it's always a really unique experience to see how other countries will treat you or how they'll do what they'll consider being the norm. When we were in Japan, we went to a local place near our apartment, and the guy and the two nurses, like the dentist and the two nurses or whatever, like his aides, would not stop complimenting how white our teeth were. And it was crazy, and it was almost uncomfortably like flattering. And it was just funny because they're like, do you do whitening? We're like, no, but we do use foreign toothpaste. I'm like, I don't use your guys' toothpaste. You know, and that's the key.
Yeah, that is kind of a thing is in other countries, sometimes people can kind of tell that you're American because you have like really white teeth. And I don't have teeth that are like super, super white, but like, there's a lot of people in the United States who go overseas. I don't know. You probably know them, you know, you see people like this all the time, and they just kind of have like normal, I don't know. There's, at my schools that I went to, there were a pretty large contingent of people with really white teeth compared to the people that I met in other countries. So when you go to another country, they're like, dang, you have really white teeth. It's like, yeah, it's sort of just an American thing. And I think it is because our toothpaste is like super strong. Because when I got Japanese toothpaste, like once or twice, I was like, I can taste like the lack of
some of that was also like a crapshoot because you like this one literally this tastes like epoxy or something. I'm not really sure. It has a rubber taste to it. Like it's just like, this is not natural. I feel like this is like chewing gum. And then, or like, oh wait, this one has like salt, like straight up salt crystals in it. Yeah. Like, I don't know what this is, but it does not feel natural.
Well, like American,
that's how it was in Korea too.
American toothpaste, you don't mess around with that. You don't F around with American toothpaste. You know, you get it in to your mouth and you brush around. You don't let it touch your tongue until you have to. And then you spit it out. Like, you don't want to play with that anymore than you have to, cause it burns. But, you know, China and Japan, the toothpaste is like, you can kind of just leave it in there as long as you want, cause it's not going to like burn.
I'm pretty sure you can just eat it. It's like a kid friendly toothpaste. Probably. I'm not really 100% sure about that. Don't quote me on that one, but like my kids have edible toothpaste, right? Because you know, you're supposed to give it to them a little bit and it's, if they eat it, that's fine. And it was just like, all right. And then one time we ran out. So my kids, I gave my son the adult toothpaste and just a little bit. And he's like, it's spicy. And I'm like, yeah, it does burn, doesn't it, buddy?
It's spicy. Oh, well, you're poor non-Mexican children.
Well, I mean, they eat Thai curry, which is you're pretty good. But he also like starts acting like he's spitting fire, but I'm like, for your little mind, I'm betting this, like, it has some kick, don't get me wrong, but it's not like, you know,
did I ever tell you my take on Thailand, that it's the Mexico of Europe? It's like, because like, okay, before I get canceled, so when I was there once, walking around eating at restaurants in kind of an urban area, there was a ton of Europeans hanging around, having fun, stuff like that. And I was like, you know what? It's sort of like, it's cheaper there. It's tropical. It has beaches. It has spicy food. It's got brown people. It's the Mexico of Europe. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's not that close, but it's sort of like, that's sort of how they were using it, I thought. Maybe there's probably not a bunch of other Mexicos of Europe, but
that
was anyway.
The other big reason is the sex tourism. That is like
trafficking versus tourism. Yeah, it's true.
Well, I mean, it's what we did is we went to, we found a good bar, a good foreign bar, and then we sat at the window and looked at nearby the red light district to watch couples or a single guy go in and then come out with one or two people on his arm. And then we'd play the game. Is it a he or is it a she? Granted, you know, this was back in 2011 or something. Yeah. I mean, the very much adult industry there was massive. And when it came to the Mexico of Southeast Asia, I know that was a lot of times, in the Philippines, or sometimes Vietnam, but like in Korea, the farmers, there was often like, they were still like mail order brides, which was like wild because, you know, you'd have a child at your teaching and you're like, you are Korean, but you are way too dark to be Korean. You speak flawless and that's when we found out, oh yeah, dude, the farmers, they literally can't get out anywhere. Like they are stuck out there. So it's very common to more or less still get like mail order brides to a certain extent. I was like, wow, that was nuts. And, they were also the cheap labor, the workforce, for that, but they would, a lot of the kids would come out to work factory work, but also go to university. And it was kind of nuts because we met some university students that did that, and they're like, yeah, we're trying to get a better education, and so we come out here for that, and then we'll go back to our own country. I'm like, that's neat. Wow. Yeah. So. Yeah, we got it lucky in a lot of ways, except for tuition costs here, debt for the rest of your life. So that's one of those. Roll the dice, see how it goes. I'm telling my kids just. Get in, like, whatever you want. Just make sure you actually want to commit. If you want to go blue collar, do it. You know, you'll go into a field that you can actually, like, work in. Not just theoretical, like, I'm going to be a journalist.
Yeah, I mean, there's different tiers. It's like, first of all, you're never going to get rich working for somebody else. So if you want to be actually rich, if you want to actually be wealthy with a capital W, you have to go into business for yourself, and you can, and whatever you're willing to work 100 hours a week at, that's what you're going to do. And you'll be wealthy. If you want an easier life, then go a bachelor's of science, in pretty much anything. And you'll have enough money and you will work pretty hard, but you won't work all that hard. And then everything else is just poverty.
All right. Well, on the note of do as we say and not as we do, because obviously we're super bad wealthy.
I mean, I've learned all that in hindsight. Like, that's me. That's like 35-year-old Nick talking to 5-year-old Nick. Like,
middle of switching apartments from one apartment to another.
Yeah.
About to be quote unquote homeless for the next month.
Yeah. I'm not saying I made the right choices. I'm saying this is what I would tell myself to keep from making the wrong choices.
All right. Well, we usually talk about games and we usually start with the news. So let's start with that.
All right. So 70% of developers worry about the sustainability of the live service model. This is coming from, I don't know where Video Games Chronicle got it, but I saw it on there. And I just thought it was kind of interesting because I was kind of like, well, I don't really know what that means to worry about the sustainability. I don't know what 70%, how hard they're worrying about it. I think it kind of says in the article, but I was thinking, but it got me thinking about, like, you know, what is the sustainability and how long is the live service model going to last? I think I mean, everything, you know, everything changes eventually. So, you know, it'll probably go away in some form, you know, change in a major way eventually. But I also am kind of like, I don't really know where it's going to go for now, you know? So anyway, I was just wondering what you thought about the longevity of the live service model, and if you think that that many developers should worry about it going away.
Oh, dude, live service, at least if you look at this last year, has been tanking hard. Everything from like Overwatch and, you know, the whole Blizzard's Overwatch League, you have games, the whole Suicide Squad, granted that's a whole new level of different issues, but ever since was it the Avengers, essentially, like, you know, it's been turning really south real fast. Very few games can make a profit, and it's really hard to sustain that. So yeah, I see it being live service is done its time, and now it's going to go away.
I mean, isn't it kind of just going to be like freaking like the MMO RPG model, where, you know, World of Warcraft came out and did up a whole bunch of, you know, made a whole bunch of money, and then everybody was like, oh, we got this, like the new thing. Everyone tried to their MMO, and it's like, well, you actually need a critical mass of people to play your game, or else it totally sucks. Is that just the same thing that's happening with live service models? It's like, okay, we really only have enough capacity for, you know, 10 live service models or live service games to be really lucrative enough to merit, you know, the continuous running of them. I don't know. I guess.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much the way it is, right? There are very few games will be able to make a impact. Now, what comes down to is how much did it cost to get you there? I mean, if you're able to make something catchy with a low barrier to entry, and then if it takes off, great. If you only need like a bare minimum to break even, then if you have to pull the plug, you know, no harm, no foul in a sense. But when you got something, you know, granted, was it Skull and Bones? You know, mentioned it before that, you know, most of that's issues because Ubisoft, I think it was Singapore, you know, their contract with the government was, you want to make a new new office here, you have to make this game, you can't just bail. And so they had to come out with a new IP. And that's why they were pot committed. You know, after spending so much time, so much money, they're like, well, we have to come out with something. And yeah, despite, you know, all that, you know, if it had a decent game, it could have at least made it back, but I doubt that's going to go anywhere either. So yeah, live service model, it was a big thing. And yeah, MMO is a good example, you know, huge for a long while, across the board. Now only a few main contenders are standing. You'll always have, like, you know, some version of a couple different Battlefield games, and it's kind of hard to come out with any other new models of this game, you know. But also, people are just tired of getting nickel and dimed. Don't want loot boxes. You know, people don't want to spend necessarily like $25 or $20 or more for a skin. I mean, depends on the skin, but like, you know, I just can't really, I have to really play a game in order to, you know, I don't even play Call of Duty, but playing as John McClane, I'm like, that seemed like cool, but I'm not going to play it. So if I played it even a little bit, I would have done it.
That's the thing that I always, so. That I started to really hate about live service games, the ones that I've played, to a large degree, League of Legends, Magic Arena. I'm trying to think of really any others, but those are like the main two. It's just kind of get tired of getting strung along. You're just like, you know, I mean, I guess those games are kind of giving you what you came for, but there's just always like a next little thing. And it's like, this is fun, but I'm tired of this, this feeling of just a little bit more. I want to like buy a game and like consume it all, like at once, and get all the fun and get like, have like a crescendo, you know? So anyway, like I think they'll always be around. I think that, yeah, it probably was a bubble. But I feel like I remember, you know, people are throwing a hammer. I feel like I remember a long time ago whenever live service games were, you know, all the rage, about, you know, 8 to 10 years ago when they were really, everything was becoming a live service game. I feel like I remember the podcast being like, oh, like the, you know, the single player game, is it going to die? Or are we just not going to have any more good single player games anymore? And I was like, I kind of wonder, because it seemed like it was going that way. And now it seems like the single player game is sort of king once again, because it's kind of the best way to play a game, in my opinion. But
yeah, I never thought it was going to go away. But at the same time, people have been harping the death of PC for a long time, and then they switch it to like the death of console. But yeah, PC has been on the quote unquote been on the ropes multiple times, and it's, you know, like I said, as far as this goes, I mean, yeah, it's not going to go away, but it will be a small group. Every now and then, someone will hit, you know, like come up with a new, you know, bright idea, and it'll do enough sparks to make it popular again, you know, for a short while.
Yeah.
And then you'll have people try piggybacking off that idea. And only the strong will survive. But honestly,
that's our motto here at this podcast.
So yeah, that's what's going to happen. I mean, we'll see, but honestly, I don't play, these games aren't for me, and I won't cry when they're gone.
Yeah, me neither.
All right, I threw up in this next article here. It's just real quick. Unfortunately, more layoffs, abound. Take-Two lays off 5% of the workforce and cancels, has some games canceled. Now, there wasn't too much about the actual games, what games itself being canceled. A lot of people are afraid how much this will affect, Grand Theft Auto, because Take-Two, they own a lot of things, but 5% is a big part for them. Unfortunately, you know, layoffs are aplenty now. But I honestly think Rockstar isn't going to really be fazed by this at all. Rockstar is their own thing. I'm not too worried personally. But yeah, this was something that just came up the other day, and I figured quick throw that in there. Hopefully the people who are affected will land on their feet. One can hope.
Yeah, it's sad. Yeah, it seems like those are kind of going around. The old layoff train is going around pretty good these days. But that's kind of games. That's kind of games for you right now. And people are talking about the economy. It's I don't really feel like the economy is all that bad. Like it's not like affecting me, but and I don't really pay attention to like politics as much anymore. But whenever I hear people talking like in the hallways and stuff, they're like, yeah, the economy is real bad. I'm like, okay. So I guess that's what's going on. But anyway.
Yeah. Price hikes on a lot of things. I know a lot of people who've been laid off, and unfortunately, depending on what industry you're in, there's a lot of, you know, there's more applicants than they are positions. So yeah. It really does depend on where you are and, you know, how your lifestyle, I guess. But yeah, it's, you know, it's one of those things that we're on a cool off period. Once for gaming, once the next gen hits, and, you know, towards the end of this generation, things will be firing on all cylinders again, I assume, because then people are going to get really, really good at making games for the current generation. And hopefully companies will then get themselves the momentum they need to really, it happens a lot. They'll scale up for the new stuff. And, you know, especially that's how, unfortunately, a lot of these people are contracted work because of that. They're going to scale up for the project, and they don't necessarily need to have everyone on there, you know, for all their, you know, benefits and everything like that. So they'll, you know, downsize when afterwards. You know, I know a number of factories that actually do that just for seasonal stuff too. Like during certain seasons, they're like, well, you know, these are the dead seasons. We're going to literally lay off like 70% of our company for like a month or two. all our employees are going to collect unemployment, and then we're going to hire back pretty much everybody that we just let go. But it's cheaper that way. So yeah, that is, you know, the system.
All right. Sorry, folks. Some technical difficulties on, I think my end. Anyway, so jumping back in, you were just saying, you were just kind of, talking about the layoffs in general.
It's unfortunately, you know, it happens when you have to scale up and then, you know, for projects and then downsize. It's kind of hard to maintain a core group of an excessive amount of people. And, you know, that's, you know, more it's unfortunately going to happen more and more, especially with these AAA studios. But even like, you know, quote unquote B tier studios, like they'll, you know, it's like they can't necessarily maintain a large group at all times. You know, so yeah, it sucks. It's just another, but this proves that even a company like Take-Two, who has the power of, like, you know, the Grand Theft Auto, with all their shark cards, can't necessarily put the whole company, you know, in the black all the time.
Yeah.
The big joke also is, you know, some CEO or some higher ups really wanted an extra bonus, or they wanted to get a new boat or something like that. So it was just easier to let go of people to get that bonus. So
yeah. Yep. I don't know about that, but it's usually it's a bit more complicated than that, but a lot of times, yeah, it is kind of funny the way that there are layoffs and then CEOs get bonuses and paid more than they ever have before. It's kind of like, yeah, that kind of sucks. Anyway.
All right. What do you got next for the news?
So Hasbro is saying they're talking to lots of developers about making the next Baldur's Gate without Larian. Obviously, we've talked about it on this podcast before. So I was just wondering, like, who do you think Hasbro should get to do the next Baldur's Gate? Because there's got to be, I mean, it just makes sense. They want to keep making more Baldur's Gates, especially because this one was so successful. You know, Dungeons & Dragons in general is kind of at all-time high in popularity, I would say. So who do you think they should get to do this next one? Any developers come to mind, or anything they should look for specifically?
Probably not the people who did the last Dark Alliance game. I can't remember who that was off the top of my head, but I remember that coming out buggy as crap.
I remember hearing about that too.
No, it was, I think that was like, it was like Turk or something. I forget the... But anyways, that company, Dark Alliance, turned out real mess. There's not a couple companies that I can really think of that would actually be really good. The big problem is, who would want to tackle that? Because after such a huge success, filling those shoes would be immensely difficult. And I think a lot of companies, like, they would, you'd want to stay clear from it, probably. Let someone else come in, flop, and then try to take over that remains.
Yeah.
That would actually be the safer, you know. So
yeah,
I don't know.
I mean,
who do you got?
It would need to be. Yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point. It's like, who is really going to want to do that? Well, a smaller studio is probably not going to be given the job, or really, they might ask for it, but they may just not be able to make a good enough pitch. A mega studio like Square or something like that would probably also not really want to do it, because it's more risk than anything else. So I feel like it would need to be an up and coming, larger but not huge studio. But I don't know who that would really be, who would really fit into that.
So I
also
think
does
the
RPGs.
Only person that comes to, yeah, the only thing I can think of is like Black Isle. They'd be the only ones I think that'd be able to handle it. They've done other. Like Planescape and stuff like that. So, but it's all a bit older at this point, Planescape Torment. But yeah, it's, you know, like a studio. You got to think of some of those other ones who do the, you know, just, but yeah, I don't know. It's,
well,
Obsidian.
I was going to say Obsidian, they can do it. Because they did Pillars of the Earth or Pillars of Eternity. That's it. So they did that already, which is, I think, a little bit less robust, but it's the same sort of general, like, hey, we've kind of done something kind of similar, the same, you know, some things sort of similar.
But then it's like, would you want to dip into your own, you know, like, you know, you're competing against yourself at that point, because they're obviously, well, they'd probably maybe be making something along the same lines of another Pillars game. And then if they, I guess if the paycheck's big enough, yeah, they'll put it on hold, but still.
Well, like, I think that second Pillars game, barely got made. From what I kind of remember about it, I don't remember why I think that, but anyway, I think it had difficulty getting made in the first place. So they may not be going to make another one. I don't know what they're working on. And Obsidian's sort of like, well, you know, I feel like they are like, are they the ones that make really good games that nobody plays? No, that's Arcane. Arcane makes really good games that nobody plays.
So I mean, like, you know, they Obsidian had Tyranny, and that was the one I was trying to think of. Tyranny was a clever game that where you get to play the role of the bad guys. And so it's not, if I remember correctly, that one was you were a bad guy and you got to just play different variants because, like, bad guys won or something, if I remember correctly, or something like that. And so you're trying, if you're trying to be too good, other people are going to turn on you. So it's just how bad do you actually want to be? And that was a clever take on the formula. But yeah, that it's not like, it's like, I don't remember. You probably could, knowing them, play a route where you like a redemption arc or something. But I just remember clearly, like, no, you have to do bad stuff. You're a bad guy. Which was kind of funny because it was always whenever you got a choice in games, I remember trying to play the bad guy route and be like, I just can't do it. Like, you go from like to do bad things is one thing, but then you got like comical, like supervillain, you know, level bad. I'm like, that's, I'm not just going to like melt the faces off all the people in the city for no apparent reason, you know, or something like that. It's just like games like Mass Effect always or like had, you know, even Infamous was really bad for it. Like, the title's Infamous, so you think you should be the bad guy. And like, no, dude, your version of bad is just, it's just kind of weird. It's just, I mean, I get cool powers out of it. I mean, I like the chain lightning, like Palpatine style, but it wasn't. I just remember playing bad guy in that one. Was I did it for the, I think I just did it for the to find out the story. You know, played it once on good, once on bad, and that was it. But yeah, no, all right. Other than that, it's like I can't think of anyone else who would try to fill the shoes in.
Yeah,
for,
it's gonna be a this. Tough. I'm like, one.
Yeah,
you know, if the game wasn't so, if it was successful, but if it wasn't so successful, then it would be a lot easier, I think, to find a bunch of different studios or be like, yeah, we'll try our hand at that. But like, I mean, that's probably the best. Like, if I was a studio and I was making a pitch for it, I'd be like, okay, if we do one, you need to let us do two. So the first one, we're basically just going to copy, like whenever we do Baldur's Gate 4, we're just going to copy what Larian did so we can learn it and figure it out and maybe do a little bit of iteration, but it's mostly going to be a copy. And then Baldur's Gate 5, which we want you to go ahead and contract for us right now, that's when we'll try to push the envelope and really make a good game. That's probably what I would say if I was a studio trying to get in on that action.
Throw a curveball, make it some company that you don't even think would make it. Game Freak, the guys who make Pokemon. There you go.
Yeah, or like
then you can have it on the Switch only. There you go.
Yeah, Baldur's Gate 4 Switch only. Running in 480p 60
yeah
frames,
like, you know, dropping to 10 frames a second.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know, it's all right, let's move on to something else, because this is just, I can't think of anyone else who'd be suited for it, nor do I really want to.
Okay, do you want Yoko?
My prediction is it's going to tank. Or at least it's not going to tank, but it'll be hard to do what Larian
is. It's big shoes to fill. All right, do you want Yoko Taro or Keanu Reeves?
Go Yoko Taro.
Yeah, this is just a little a little weird thing. So Yoko Taro opened his fat mouth, so of course we have to talk about it. So Stellar Blade is kind of coming out here real soon. People are talking about, people are playing it. Yoko Taro played it, and he said, and I quote, "Stellar Blade is such a Stellar Blade is such an amazing game. I think it's much better than Nier Automata." And then to which the makers of Stellar Blade, I think, said something about how Nier Automata is really, really good. And kind of, they're kind of just like, they're like, "No, your game is better. No, your game is better," sort of. And I just think it's funny because it's very, I just love Yoko Taro's games. Not the games that he makes. I do love those as well, but like his mind games that he likes to play. So Yoko Taro is being very humble here, and he's like talking about Stellar Blade, which is being compared in many ways to Nier for, I don't know why, no reason apparently, but anyway, it is being compared. And so I guess he just wanted to go over there and play it. But so he's talking about it, but he's also mentioning, and he's being very nice to it, but he's also mentioning Nier, so that you will remember to go play Nier and spend some more money on Nier if you haven't already bought Nier, and play Nier and buy it so that Yoko Taro can get some more money, because that is what he cares about the most. And I respect that.
Well, I mean, they, I think the developers of Stellar Blade had already cited themselves for like inspiration from Nier Automata anyways, but the, I mean, it's a game that its developers had 7 years, you know, like this is releasing 7 years after Nier. So yeah, you kind of had some time to make some improvements. I mean, it's
next generation
visually is one thing, but also just, you know, just actual, you know, gameplay, you know, Nier still plays really well. I was starting to play it not that long ago. I had to put it aside for some other stuff, but I'll get back to it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a solid game, and Stellar Blade, have only played the demo. And it's a solid demo. I mean, I will eventually get around to playing the main game, probably. I probably will play it. I'm not sure if I'm going to play it before or after I finish Nier, because at this rate, I don't think I'm going to be able to finish Nier anytime soon. There's a lot of stuff on my plate, and especially since I keep on getting sidetracked by things like I just ended up playing through Spider-Man. And there's one or two other games I'm playing through right now because of new stuff coming out. So yeah, I'll talk, you know, if we have time to talk about games today.
You've got time. They're going to make another Nier, or Yoko Taro's going to make another real game eventually. But I think it'll probably be a couple of years away. So the fact that you've already gone through Nier Replicant and you've started on Nier Automata is perfectly fine. By the time we actually hear an announcement for a new Yoko Taro game, you'll have either finished it, or you'll be like, oh, you'll be able to jump back in and just
it'll probably be on the next generation of stuff, and he'll re-release his old stuff, Replicant and Automata, but then he'll have some extra sequence of numbers attached to it with some other name, and then you'll have to play that multiple times in order to get the new ending that really ties everything up together.
It just has one, the new ending is just one frame, and you have to find it, and it's like a treasure hunt, so you can find it first. And
it's just a unicorn, origami unicorn, right?
Yeah. Just a picture.
I got what you're throwing down.
This is a picture of Yoko Taro, of course, with the Emil head on, but he's completely naked. That's what it's going to be. I'm calling it right now.
Okay. I know how your fanfic is going now. Cool.
That's my fanfic, yeah.
All right, and then the last bit of news was just the fun fact that the internet seems to be super happy or super confused about Keanu Reeves voicing Shadow the Hedgehog. I haven't seen the second Sonic movie, so I only watched the first one, and like, yep, that exists.
I like this. I like Keanu Reeves being Shadow the Hedgehog. The only problem, no pun intended, is that he might overshadow regular Sonic, because Shadow being voiced by Keanu Reeves might be way cooler. that might happen.
It depends. Like, once again, it depends on how they're going to portray Shadow. I mean, he's always an edgelord character. No one really cared.
Yeah. if they make John Wick references or anything like that, that'll be hilarious.
They're gonna do some sort of gung-fu thing where, you know, he disarms a bunch of people and it'll be ridiculous.
Or if he says like, I know kung fu or something like that, or if he takes like a red pill or something like that. There's a lot of fodder.
You can dip into a lot of stuff. Gosh, you know,
so much.
There's so much fan art where he's stopping bullets or he's wearing shades, looking down at you. You know, a cyberpunk style. I mean, yeah, just want a Bill and Ted reference. You know, some whoa dude or something. You know,
is that the one where they go excellent?
Yep.
I'm sure there's a Point Break reference.
Carlin in a phone booth.
Oh yeah.
Have you not seen the Bill and Ted movies?
No, I just know parts of them.
The first one is actually holds up pretty well. The second one is fine, and the third one, coming out so far later, it's not a great movie, but if they made the movie back then and just canned it, like just shelved it. And then re-released it. That has the same exact tonal vibe as the originals. So I'm like, I give them credit for at least matching that. They didn't try like reimagining the characters or making them. Oh no, that's the same. It's straight up the same mold. I mean, I usually don't like it when anime does that either. But the Bill and Ted being a shorter experience, like that third movie, like that was okay. I mean, it had some really funny moments and some really flat moments. So yeah. It's probably it's something I would say, if you watch the first two, go ahead and watch the third one. But the first two movies are classic. You often can, I remember they were almost always selling them at like a Target or a Walmart as a double pack for like $7 on DVD. So I was just like, in fact, I bought it for that's one of the last times I watched it, is I bought it for a coworker as a White Elephant, like Christmas gift for a work thing. And they were really happy with it, so it was like I won.
You won. That's awesome. Hey,
so long as they weren't disappointed with me, I was like that. I think I got that like a Domo Kun, an oversized Domo for his desk, and he had no idea what Domo was. It was really funny. It was just like, he's like, "What is this monster?"
That'd be a cool thing to have on a desk. All right. I agree with that.
All right. Do you want to keep on going, or if you want to call it here because of technical issues?
Let's go ahead and call it. Let's go ahead and call it.
All right. So we're going to keep this as a shorter episode today. Unfortunately, I'm blaming Nick's internet for this, but we've been having some issues even since before recording. So sorry for the, if it's a little more choppier than normal, but also Nick has to get ready to leave his apartment in a couple days, so he's kind of busy.
And it is kind of late.
All right. Yeah, next time it'll be Nick will have a new backdrop, and it'll be interesting. So we can all try to guess where you should be by a window, so we can all try to triangulate your new location.
If you hear the sounds of the highway, you'll know that. That's a hint. I'll just say that'll be a hint.
All right. Well, thank you for sticking up to the end. And this has been Another Dead Pixel. This is episode 72. Nick, what words of wisdom do you have for everyone?
Start packing earlier than you think you need to. That's all I can say.
Dude, I told you months ago.
I know.
That this was going to happen.
I know. And I did, but it wasn't enough. It was.
All right. And my word of wisdom for this is, so when you realize you are too behind, trash bags are your friends. Grab the rest of the stuff that you can't. Those coat hangers that you left and you don't want to leave behind, but you forgot to pack, throw them in a garbage bag. The clothes with them too, just throw them in. All your internet stuff, your router, modem, all the cables, trash bag. Just throw them in a different trash bag. And yeah, that way you can throw them in and just squeeze them easier into the crevices of your car.
Yeah. Squeeze them crevices.
Yep. Just make sure if you have anything, when you throw your console or your PC, you know, your PC tower, just make sure to leave that on the top of the stuff, but stable, because you don't need to be breaking hard and watching and hearing that come crashing down.
You don't want that.
But good luck with the rest of your move, and good luck trying to set up a space at your new location. So
it's going to be jank, but you know, that's fine.
I don't know. You'll have more cameras available, so I'm expecting a multi-switching at, you know, setup. Just, you know, for the Patreon you're about to set up, you'll have a feet cam.
Dude, yeah.
So yeah,
I've been working on that. Okay, that's it.
Well, thanks y'all for sticking with us. Until next time, take it easy.
Bye.